Michael, and this is First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer, Chris
Carter.
Good morning,
Carter. See?
That is Nick Wright. Guys are good today?
Absolutely.
It is Thursday. It is almost Friday. Then it's the weekend. We've got a good 4 days I just mapped out for us. We got a great 3 hours ahead for us.
We got a great 3 hours. Our prep, our people got us ready. They were all playing video games, getting stats and stuff off the video
games. So much was done before you even got here. See, they could chill right before showtime. We got Chiefs. Well, I'll let you tell us what we got going on.
Okay, I'll do that.
Yeah.
Why don't we start with this? There's a Hall of Fame quarterback starting to worry about Tom Brady. We'll tell you who that is. Mm. The Saints might be emerging as the best team in the league, but we will start with the game they play on Thursday night. They call it Thursday Night Football, and it is a big one. Chargers and Chiefs, the two top teams in the AFC West, two of the best teams in the NFL. KC won their first battle in week one, but that was a long time ago. That was back when we thought Patrick Mahomes could be league MVP. Oh, wait. Injuries could play a factor tonight. Chargers running back Melvin Gordon and Chiefs wideout Tyreek Hill, both questionable for this game. But Mahomes is well aware of what's at stake in this one. Take a listen.
The Chargers are a good team, a team that is really on a hot streak right now, and you're playing basically for the AFC West title. And so you go out there and try to get yourself ready to go physically and mentally to win a football game.
These are the game. These are the ones you dream about when you're little. These are the ones you talk about in the off season, having a chance to play to keep your division champ hopes alive and to, you know, get your spot in the postseason. So and these are the games you want to be in.
This is a big game tonight, CC. Chiefs could clinch a first-round bye with a win. Also a big game for the Chargers. What is the key to this one?
Well, I believe there's a number of keys for the Chargers. If they're going to be successful, if they're going to leave Arrowhead with a win, there's a couple of things that they have to do. And we know about the running situation, the running backs on both sides. They're depleted. Melvin Gordon, from Chargers' standpoint, he's a game-time decision, so don't know if he's going to play. Which one of these teams can establish some type of running game? And I believe what the Chargers have to do, and as I was with Coach Mangini said, Kelce and Tyreek Hill, both of these guys, Kelce because he's the best tight end, and Tyreek Hill because he's injured. I'm going to jam both of these guys at the line of scrimmage. I'm not going to allow free releases off the field. Tyreek Hill's coming into this game with a foot injury, yep. And I just believe he's questionable coming into the game. I believe over the course of 60, 65 plays, if I play him bump and run, I can wear him down. I'm going to force Patty Mahomes. When I force him out of the pocket, I'm going to force him to his left. He doesn't like to go to his left to be able to throw the football. And I'm going to force him to find some other people in this offense. I'm going to take Kelce away. I'm going to limit Kelce. I'm going to limit Tyreek Hill and have him decide in this game, you're not going to be able to beat me with those two because they haven't won a game where one of those guys has been dominant. From a Chargers standpoint, I don't think people know about some of the talent that they have in their secondary. Derwin James, we talked about him a lot. Outstanding rookie season out of Florida State as a safety. So that's one of the matchups we're going to watch with the tight end, but also on the back end. I believe their secondary is really underrated, and I believe they can give Kansas City some problems. So if those things are able to happen, because it's going to be an unseasonably warm day, it's going to be a little bit of rain during the course of the day, but tonight, I mean, it's in the 40s in Kansas City.
It's going to be a beautiful day by Kansas City December standards.
So because both teams are trying to find a running game, I believe both coaches, offensive coordinators, get off that running game and they try to throw the ball all around the football field tonight.
So you mentioned Derwin James. I'm going to mention the safety on the other side, who we have not seen since week one of 2017, and that's Eric Berry. Eric Berry returns tonight for the Kansas City Chiefs, his first game in a year and a half. That is key because given the fact that the Chargers might not have Melvin Gordon, we know they don't have Austin Ekeler. So if Gordon doesn't go, they are down, much like the Chiefs are, to their third string running back. It would be a game where they're going to try to move the ball through the pass, through their passing game. And Phillip Rivers has struggled enormously against Kansas City of late and certainly at Arrowhead. He's lost 7 in a row to the Chiefs, and his last 4 at Arrowhead, he has a passer rating below 70, more interceptions than touchdowns. So when the Chiefs, the one part of their defense right now that is playing well is their pass rush, you add Eric Berry to the secondary, who, even though he's been out a year and a half, we've seen who's been playing safety for the Kansas City Chiefs. I think Eric Berry, even a limited, rusty Eric Berry, will be an upgrade over what they have had back out there. Do you?
I mean, I'm just going to say I'm going to wait.
Okay.
I mean, what NFL player have we seen off a year and a half that we got a great deal of faith? We've seen players being transferred from one team to another, and they're healthy. But still getting back to that full speed in the NFL game, it's a tremendous leap. There's a reason why he didn't play last week. There's a reason why he didn't play the week before that. There's a reason why he wasn't practicing. So I'm a little apprehensive on a field that can be suspect. I want to wait and see on that. I know I would be careful trying to bake in the great player that we saw. It's a great story that he's coming back. I look
Let's
forward to week number 16 and 17.
Yeah.
There it is. Let's see what Eric Berry is on the field tonight.
And I don't think he's going to be great tonight. I think right now an average safety play would be an upgrade from what the Chiefs had been getting.
Are they going to call defenses where they expect him to be average? Are they going to play conservative? Will they put him back in the zone compared to, if I know Eric Berry,
let him be Eric Berry.
He's going to be up in the box.
Yep.
He's going to be playing one-on-one. And I just believe a couple weeks at full speed. Now, I'm excited. If he can stay healthy for the playoffs, that would be something I would be like, wow, who's adding a player like Eric Berry coming down the stretch?
The other factor that I think is instructive in this matchup is to look to the week one matchup. Because the week one matchup, even though the Chiefs won by 10 points, you look at the stats. So the Chargers had 540 yards. The Chiefs had 360. The Chargers had 35 minutes time of possession. The Chiefs had 25 minutes time of possession. What happened in that game was it started with a Tyreek Hill punt return touchdown.
Yeah.
The Chargers field goal, and then a Tyreek Hill 60-yard touchdown. It's 14-3 Kansas City. Phillip Rivers threw one bad red zone interception, and then late in the game, they muffed a punt, and the Chiefs got the ball inside the 5. So even though the Chiefs were up 38-20 in that game, the Chargers played them pretty damn even, if not outplayed them in a lot of facets of that game. And that speaks to the quality that this team has been. You mentioned the two best teams in the AFC West. Record-wise, we can drop the West off that. These have been the two best teams in the AFC thus far this season. Should be an excellent game tonight.
Okay, so if the Chiefs' goal is to render the Chargers one-dimensional with Melvin Gordon out and relying on their passing game.
Melvin Gordon potentially out, questionable.
What about on the other side? If no Kareem Hunt and Tyreek Hill is questionable.
And Spencer Ware might not play.
How do you stop this? I mean, who do the Chiefs put out there as their offensive weapon?
Well, one, the first time we're going to see a guy that we've seen in primetime before, that's Kelvin Benjamin, started off his career in Carolina, got traded to Buffalo. Buffalo released him this year. Now he's been there for a couple weeks practicing with them. He's going to get his first game action tonight. So I look for him because he's a big physical guy. Look for Andy Reid to throw him some quick things as that physical presence that replaces some of that running game. But I look for them to hand the ball sideways to a number of different people, a lot like Carolina does with their wide receivers, to replace. That's where Andy Reid gets really, really creative. Now, Andy Reid, at the beginning of the day, he wants to throw it. At the end of the day, he wants to throw it. I hope that he doesn't just fall into that as we come down the stretch and his running backs are depleted. You got to be able to get that running game to be able to protect Patty Mahomes, because if not, they are going to tee off on him. Eventually, as we saw last week with Baltimore, They're starting to get closer and closer to him week after week.
And one of their best offensive linemen, Cam Irving, their left guard, who left the game against Baltimore early, he's not expected to play tonight. I'm very interested to see how Patrick Mahomes looks tonight, because the Chargers have an excellent pass rush. You mentioned Derwin James, their safety. We know the Chiefs, Kareem Hunt's not on the team anymore. He's not out. He's not in the league right now. Spencer Ware almost assuredly is not going to play, and you've laid out a way to slow down Tyreek Hill and Kelce. So we talked yesterday about how, when we were talking about Andre Johnson and Nuke Hopkins, how great receivers can make mediocre quarterbacks better, how they can upgrade the level. I want to see the flip side of that. I want to see when, if they are going to try to take those guys out, that means Chris Conley, DeMarcus Robinson are going to get favorable matchups. I want to see if Patrick Mahomes, through ball placement, through speaking to the receivers with his passes, things Chris talks about, if he can help those guys play above their talent level because they are going to be one-on-one in favorable matchups if they have the game plan that we think the Chargers will have all game long.
Chargers and Chiefs, Thursday Night Football on Fox.
Last one, going to be a good one.
It's definitely going to be a good one. Got to take a break coming up. A Hall of Famer says the end is near for Tom Brady. We'll talk about that next on First Things First.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Robinhood is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Robinhood is simple and intuitive with a clear design that shows data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Here's why I recommend Robinhood. No commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. It's simple, easy to understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone. Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections. Collections are like sectors like entertainment, social media, curated categories like female CEOs, and analyst ratings of buy, hold, sell for every stock. You learn by doing it. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds. Custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock, such as Apple, Ford, or Sprint, to help build your portfolio. Sign up at first.robinhood.com. That's first.robinhood.com.
Welcome back. We'll get to Tom Brady in a second. But first, check out these highlights presented by Geico. Perhaps an NBA championship preview. Raptors, Warriors, KD drives, posterizes Serge Ibaka with the one-handed
little stretch
slam.
Armstrong there by KD.
Now, that was one of the few times that KD and the Warriors didn't struggle with the length that Toronto has on the court. Nice move by KD. KD's ability to be able to dribble the ball, that really helps out his scoring.
Mavs Hawks, Luka Doncic slides over to help on defense, rejects Trae Young. Did you say Hallelujah?
Yeah, I said Hallelujah.
That's good.
The Ringer did a whole song about that. That's their intellectual property. I stole it like I do Chris's takes on radio. Look, here, Luka, he ain't playing like a rookie. He hasn't played like a rookie. Last time he played like a rookie was when he was 16 years old playing with grown men in Europe. Trae Young, you got to eat that. They were, of course,
Hawks
traded for each
Hawks
other.
Hawks gave away Luka to draft Trae.
They got an extra pick coming at your
Kings
cousin.
Wolves.
They're going to need a couple picks.
Willie Cauley-Stein goes strong to the hoop, dunks over Dario Saric.
Well, by the way, the Kings, another team that could have drafted Luka. They were sitting there in the two-hole, decided to pass on him. Willie Cauley-Stein?
Well, because De'Aaron Fox, they had a reason to pass on. They had a point guard.
Yeah, I feel like De'Aaron and Luka could play next to each other, see? I feel like those would be interesting.
This
Sorry,
is the
go
biggest
ahead.
Problem. Sacramento's playing good ball, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is true. Hawks not. Stink. Watch this.
Okay, guys. Oak Ridge High School in Orlando. Niven Glover throwing down the insane 360 through the legs.
That's as nice as high school dunk I have seen.
And well shot.
Nice, not high school player. I'm talking about in-game dunk.
A between the legs 360, that can win a dunk contest in the NBA. He did this in a game in high school.
Is he going to college somewhere?
I would imagine so. I would hope so, young man. If not,
that's nice.
I got to see the transcript because he got the athletic ability.
All right, moving on to some football. With the Patriots about to win their 10th straight AFC East title, Tom Brady at age 41 is defining the odds. And just for the record, guys, I do not think 41 is old, obviously. But while Brady's still on pace for 28 touchdowns, his statistics might not line up with other quarterbacks in this heightened year of offensive prowess. And one Hall of Famer has noticed. Warren Moon said in an interview that the numbers are starting to show that there's a deterioration coming. See, I'll start with you. You know Moon well. What do you make of what he had to say?
Well, Warren Moon, he's truly one of the few people that has the type of credibility to be able to. Yeah, everyone's going to be analyzing Tom Brady. But the reason why I say Warren Moon is because he's one of the few players that had success in this league at an advanced age. I did play a couple years with him in the 90s. He taught me so much about football, brilliant football. But to me, he has, we talk about Cam Newton. Cam Newton has a body like we've never seen. But Warren Moon has the best body. I'm talking about arms, legs, brain of any quarterback in the history of this game. Warren was a great athlete, but he was a pocket passer. He started off playing 6 years in the CFL, started 94 games before he went on to a 17-year NFL career. So he was a starting quarterback at 42. He started 10 games. So I wanted to start it with that. And what Warren points out is most quarterbacks, they don't lose their fastball by being able to throw. They lose their fastball by ball by because their legs fail them. Dan Marino, John Elway, those are two of the quarterbacks. The reason why they stopped playing was because their legs. They had too many leg problems. And that little 3x3 box that you have to master in the pocket as a quarterback, when you lose that ability, people start getting closer to you. So that's what Warren is starting to talk about. All the years and years of all those thousands and thousands of dropbacks in the pocket, all those days and days of practicing, your legs take a pounding as a quarterback. And that's what he's referring to as far as what he's seeing with Tom right now.
See, when you were first retired and you were doing Inside the NFL with Dan Marino, in that moment, Marino had been retired a few years at that point. How many people on earth had a better arm than Dan Marino?
It was still Aaron Rodgers. We hadn't discovered him yet, right. So Dan was still the best. Matter of fact, I don't know where Dan is right now. Dan can hit you on the deep out right now.
And so why? But at the end, for Dan Marino, he didn't look like Dan Marino anymore. But you're saying he still had the arm. Why didn't he?
Because his legs.
Because his legs.
His legs failed him, and people don't realize that it's no different than having a great house. You can have a roof. Man, you can have side paneling. You can have all the stuff inside. But if that foundation, and once that foundation begins to crack, it's hard to throw the football and throw it effectively.
A quarterback's arm, like Peyton Manning is the exception here, because his arm failed him, but that was because he had the nerves, and like he had the neck injury.
And I would say Peyton never had a big, big arm. It was probably going to be his arm that went first. He doesn't have one of the biggest arms that we've ever seen playing the game.
But the point that, like, this is the arm being the last to go, it's like a shooter in the NBA. Like, Reggie Miller to this day can go out there and hit 80% unguarded from three, but the rest of his body went on him. And so that's what Warren Moon's talking about, and that is what we're seeing. Like, where Brady is this year, he's 14th in the league in rating. He's 11th in touchdowns. He's 12th in yards per attempt. He's 18th in completion percentage. What we are baking in is that he will be able to channel it in the postseason, in the biggest moments. And what we know, we don't even have to bake in, is we know some guys, the all-time greats in the biggest moments just stay the same. Most guys in the biggest moments get worse. The guys that are in the truly special all-time greats in the biggest moments actually get even better. That's what Brady has been. And we've seen him in the Super Bowls or in the AFC Championship game late. We've seen him have those moments. But I totally understand what Warren Moon's talking about, because Tom Brady throughout his career has been one of the most mobile quarterbacks in football. Just mobile in the pocket, stepping up,
and not
stepping
a great
back.
Athlete.
No, but
the mobility right in that pocket.
And so that if that does go, that's where you see really that's what happened on that sack before the half. He was unable to step up and throw it away. The rush came to him and he went down, because in the past, I think he could have stepped up before the half or stepped up into the pocket and thrown it out the back of the end zone.
Warren Moon actually said a number of interesting things. One of them, I don't think you fall off a cliff, but it's gradual. And once that gradual decline starts, there's no turning back from it. It's a very slight but decline. Are we at the beginning of his gradual decline? Are we sort of in the middle of it? Are we starting to even see it? Where are we with Tom Brady?
That part is hard, because, Tom, we've never had anyone like him. And also, we can't forget the Super Bowl. We can't forget what he did late in that game. We can't forget that. Now, we do have this season, but for most people, they thought over the last 2 years this was going to happen. It's going to happen. Like, Father Time is undefeated. I felt like last year, Jenna, when we were watching Tom versus Time, one of the things you and I were most intrigued about was the things that Tom was doing surrounding the pass rush, how he was avoiding people. And you're like, why is he working on that? Because that's the part that he's going to need. And watching the Miami game and is watching the last couple games, when people get close to Tom, he's not as accurate as he has been. So, yes, I believe that the time, it is there, the deterioration. Does that mean he can't win a Super Bowl? No, it doesn't mean that. But what it means is Gronk becomes more important. Edelman becomes more important. Josh Gordon becomes more important. And that offensive line build to give him just that little bit of extra time. And it becomes important, too, for them to be able to play at home and not play catch-up. All right? This is not the type of team where Tom Brady is. If I'm the Pats, that I want to be able to get behind and try to track teams down.
Well, here's what's so confusing about Brady. And you guys have heard me say this before. His career made sense until 4 years ago because we saw the decline. In 2010, he had arguably the best year he's ever had aside from the undefeated year. They're 14-2. He has a 111 rating. The next year, it's 106. The next year, it's 99. The next year, it's 87. And you're like, okay, this is the gradual decline. And then it got better, 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 and they made 3 Super Bowls in 4 years. They won 2 of them. And it's like, hold on. He was declining, and then all of a sudden he hit a new peak.
That's why we're all gun-shy to say, like what you just said, no one wants to say, oh, we're at the decline, because we got to take a step back.
Because it looked like we were there. It looked like we were there, and then he suspended 4 games 1 year, and he throws 28 touchdowns and 2 interceptions on the season in his age 39 season, his age 40 season. They get to the Super Bowl and what is it? They has 400 yards passing. And like they, so Brady had the decline and then recovered to even greater heights. And so now what we're seeing, you don't know if he's going to have somehow a third act to his post-act career. That's why I think everyone's hesitant.
All right, we'll talk more about this coming up. But on the other side, a very disappointing season for the Eagles. Perhaps has hit rock bottom. We'll talk about that next on First Things First. Twin brothers defend their titles in a huge night of championship fights on Fox. PBC, December 22nd, only on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Time now for stories to start your morning. Dwayne Haskins' NFL draft stock skyrocketed the last 3 weeks of the season, but the Buckeye quarterback says he's focused on Washington, and rightfully so. So he'll make his NFL draft decision after the Rose Bowl. See, what are your thoughts on that?
It's hard for college players to continue developing. I'd much rather see him stay in college another year, a lot like Mitch Trubisky. He had the big 1 year at North Carolina, decides to come out. The Bears take him, and as you can still see, he's still developing in the passing game. The NFL's not going anywhere, kids, especially from a quarterback standpoint. You can play until you're 38, 40. Take your time.
In your eyes, if he were to come out, is he at the top of the list of the draft eligible quarterbacks?
I mean, there's no quarterback in college better than him. No, those guys aren't. I wouldn't take him as my franchise quarterback.
All right, moving on. Big boost for the Chiefs tonight against the Chargers. We mentioned it earlier. All-Pro safety Eric Berry returns for Kansas City for the first time since he ruptured his Achilles last season in the opener against the Patriots. Nick, how big of a deal is this for the Chiefs and for Berry?
Well, I'm very happy for Eric personally. This is a guy that came back from cancer to make first-team All-Pro, came back from a blown ACL to make first-team All-Pro, and now he's trying to come back from a torn Achilles. From talking to people in Kansas City, this has been about pain management all year long, and he is now going to try to gut through it to make a playoff push. I think just having Eric Berry out there is something of an upgrade, given it was Daniel Sorensen and company playing safety. But if he at any point this year gets back to the real Eric Berry, it transforms the secondary of the Chiefs.
Chiefs fans, I just would beware. Just be careful. It's more important that after this game, over that, he's got a mini bye because he got the extended week with playing on Thursday. Is he going to be available for the last 2 games? All right? That's more important than him playing tonight. All right, can he sustain that? Can he get back on the practice field? I love Eric Berry. He's a great player, but I need to see him on the field. There hasn't been an NFL player miss a year and a half and then get on the field and be effective. I hope he can get to the playoffs and be healthy.
All right, moving on to the NBA now. Big game for Anthony Davis last night. 44 points, 18 rebounds. And it went over the Thunder. See, what'd you think of the Brow last night?
Oh, he's special. Inside, outside. That's the reason why he's such a special player. That's why we think about him as being an MVP candidate. And that's why if he goes to Los Angeles with LeBron, that's LeBron's best way to get a championship because there is no matchup. Man, you got to go to outer space, all right? Mm-hmm. Ain't no one in the East, no one in the West can match up with the Brow. Special, special young player who just continues to get better.
Back-to-back back-to-back 40-point games. Last night, in my eyes, the most impressive game of the season because of who he was up against. Not only the one seed in the West, but the number one defense in all of basketball in the Oklahoma City Thunder, and they had no answer for Anthony Davis. The only yeah but with him is health. If he can play 75 to 80 games, he's going to be a top three MVP guy, no question about it.
All right, finally, no Kawhi, no problem for the Toronto Raptors. Toronto beat the Warriors by 20 points last night, despite Kawhi being sidelined by a bruised hip. Kyle Lowry stepped up, 23 points, 12 assists. Steph Curry stepped down, just 10 points on 3 of 12 shooting. Nick, Raptors are 7-1 without Kawhi in the lineup this season. How impressive is that, along with the win over the Warriors last night?
You mentioned Steph. This was Steph's first legit bad game of the year. He's allowed to have one of those every 20 or so. He had been so good. Mm-hmm. But the big story last night is the Raptors. This game shocked me. For the Raptors, without their best player, to go into Oracle and win that game convincingly when they're on a back-to-back, after beating the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard, the Warriors are rested. I couldn't have seen this coming from 100 miles away. But it speaks to the progression of their players and the talent development. Kyle Lowry busted out of his shooting slump 2 days ago, continued that yesterday, and you are seeing the depth of the team. We talk about Boston having so much depth. Mm-hmm. I don't know that any team in the NBA, 1 through 10, has more quality guys. They can put out two different starting fives that are legitimate NBA starting fives. You saw that last year. They just didn't have the top level talent that they have this year, and they couldn't get over the mental block of LeBron. But this Raptors team is very legit, see, and what they did last night was as impressive a win as anybody's had in the NBA all year.
I tried to look for what did we miss, and what we didn't know, there were some unknowns as far as Kawhi to the general public. How healthy would he be? How would he get acclimated to this new team? Kawhi and his teammates are getting along great. I think it's very, very impressive for them to be as effective as they have been. This two-game road trip with the Clippers and the Warriors back-to-back to beat those two teams by the number of points they beat them without Kawhi, I believe, is impressive. Their younger players, how they would continue to develop, because we don't know. We don't know with coaching staffs. That's the big question with the Lakers. The Raptors players, they're developing. Those younger players, oh, man, they're developing.
Right.
Pascal and everything, you could see Durant and the Warriors struggle with his length. Serge Ibaka, this is the best I've seen him offensively, and that's a credit to Nick Nurse. What's his specialty? His specialty in the NBA is designing offenses and running offenses. So if you look at the difference between him and Dwayne Casey, the last coach, Casey, defensive specialist, Nurse, offensive specialist. So you can see with Kawhi, without Kawhi, what they try to do offensively and spreading the ball, passing the ball is far more effective. So even though they've been the best record in the East, this team I thought was better because how they function offensively, I thought that would be easier to carry over once we got into late in the season and into the playoffs.
I just want to follow up on two names you said before you jump in, Jeanette. Serge Ibaka, I thought he was done. Serge Ibaka in the playoffs last year was borderline unplayable. His contract was looked at like an albatross, and all of a sudden he is playing the best basketball he's played since he was in Oklahoma City. And Pascal Siakam, his jump from a guy who they drafted to be a defender to being a legitimate offensive threat seemingly overnight between year 2 and 3 has been an absolute revelation. And do not...
He developed a lot like Kawhi Leonard. When they got Kawhi from San Diego, not tremendous expectations. Drafted him as a what?
What? Drafted him as defensive specialist, 15th pick.
And then you start to see Kawhi start dribbling the ball. Kawhi got a little jump shot, and that's what you're seeing, the same type of development there in Toronto with their young star.
And I was just going to, and the guy that came over with Kawhi, Danny Green, what he adds for them spacing-wise, having a 40-plus percent knockdown shooter out there and what it opens up for the rest of their offense has been excellent for them as well.
I've been sitting here for weeks listening to you guys talk about how good Toronto is, how good their bench is, and clearly how good Kawhi Leonard is. Have we put an unfair cap on this Toronto team, you know, out of the East, maybe take out of the East off? Is it possible that they could go head-to-head with the Warriors?
I don't think anyone can beat the Warriors, and I do think it should be noted the Warriors are about to get an all-NBA-level center added to this basketball team. And Steph Curry's not going to have 3 of 12 nights. Like, Draymond Green's not always going to get in early foul trouble. But I do not – there is no shame in being the second-best team in the NBA in this year with this stacked Warriors team. And I think the Raptors are, at this moment, clearly the second-best team in the NBA.
I believe they're the second-best team. I believe it will be a better series than we've seen in the other series because of their overall depth. And Kawhi's ability to be able to go head-to-head with Durant. And then now Kawhi don't have to take him the whole game, all right? Because you got other young stars who have some length that they can put on him. I think Nick Nurse and the way they run their offense, Toronto is a serious contender. But right now, Golden State's only playing with 3 all-stars. All right, we talked about getting Cousins back. And, man, Draymond is not an all-star. He is not playing like an all-star. Only scored 2 points last night. His body language and how he's playing the game is not nearly where. So if he doesn't come out of what he's doing, they can get Draymond back. They would struggle with Toronto if Draymond continues to play at that level.
They were daring him to shoot. He finally took him up on it. He damn near missed the whole basket on one of them. Like, his – what is – Draymond Green was never supposed to be a great shooter, but the year they won 73 games, he was – you had to respect his shot. He now is worse than he was when he came into the league from the 3-ball, and that has – that constricts them just a little bit.
All right, let's get back to football, talk some Eagles. Last year at this time, what were we talking about? We were talking about an 11-2 Eagles team, playoff bound, with Nick Foles at the helm because Carson Wentz had just gotten hurt. This year, Eagles are 6-7. Wentz is back from that injury, but it's been a very disappointing season, to say the least. And to make matters worse, a back issue is reportedly likely to keep Wentz out in a big matchup with the Rams Sunday night, and perhaps even the rest of the season. CeCe, how disappointing has this been for Wentz?
I'm not disappointed. I mean, this is a team sport. Carson Wentz has played as good as you can expect him to play. If you look at the wide receivers and the targets that he was going to have available for him, they were not what they expected. They have struggled with that. Mike Wallace, injured reserve. He's supposed to be their deep threat. Jeffrey struggled, injuries, come back late after a bad shoulders, had to make the trade for Golden Tate, couldn't create a lot of chemistry there. Nelson Aguilar went backwards as a wide receiver, didn't grow on what he did last year. The lack of a running attack, an offensive line that was the best in the league around the middle of the pack. So there's a lot of disappointment around him. I'm not disappointed with Carson Wentz and the way he's played.
Let me tweak the word from disappointment to concern. Like, what we have – one of the great things, maybe the greatest thing about the older generation of quarterbacks that is starting to age out of the league is their availability. Eli Manning has never missed a game due to injury in his career.
Based on the way he's played the last few years, though, a lot of people wish he was.
Okay, sure. Fair enough. But Peyton Manning went the whole stretch, had the neck surgery, came back, didn't miss a game due to injury until his final year. Brady has the 1 year with the blown knee. That's it. You mentioned Phillip Rivers. Russell Wilson, who's not the older generation, he's never missed time. Carson Wentz's last year at North Dakota State broke his wrist. His first year in the league had cracked ribs. Last year, obviously, the devastating knee injury. And now this year, they're potentially shutting down for the season with 3 weeks left because of a back issue. How concerning is that to you?
It's not concerning at all, because I believe if they were in the top of the playoff, that he'd be playing. I believe that they realize the chance of making the playoffs are very, very slim, and there's no need to put him out there with that offensive line. I believe that to be the case. So, no, I'm not concerned. And I wouldn't compare him to those quarterbacks, because those quarterbacks are very, very rare. But if you go through those same – I'll take you through all those plays Carson Wentz got hurt on. You tell me another quarterback. That play at North Dakota State, he got the broken wrist. Well, you can't stop a broken bone. You put any other quarterback in there when he's going into the end zone against the Rams. What happens? They're going to get shattered. They're going to break. So those injuries are normal. What about Aaron Rodgers? We don't complain about him. He had a couple cracked collarbones, right?
Mm-hmm. No,
so
but I think that's
a part of the game. You cannot avoid broken bone. So, no, I don't have a problem with him moving forward as my franchise quarterback or worrying, can he stay healthy?
So the clarification, or I guess difference I have with you there is, see, is that they're a half game out of the playoffs. They're done for the division. But they absolutely, if they go 3-0 down the stretch, they're a favorite to make the playoffs. And so if he misses this week, which is essentially a must-win game for them, to me that is a significant, it's not just precautionary. They're not sitting there where it's like, well, the season's over for us. And so...
Okay, so what's your worry? What are you going to do?
My concern is this. I think that part of what made Carson Wentz has made him special is his ability to extend plays, his ability to deal with a pass rush, shake a guy off, roll out, and either run the football or fire it downfield. If he starts to be a guy that you have to be more cautious with, that he starts to play more cautious, part of what has made him special, to me, part of what has made him, barring injury, a no-doubter, if you remove that part from his game, I think it puts a ceiling on his effectiveness.
But who said he was going to do that? We're just going to bake that one in. Carson Wentz is getting ready to change and start to play timid.
Well, so if that's what I was asking you about your level of concern. If back-to-back years can't get through a season because of
I
injury.
I just haven't seen NFL players that say, hey, I'm concerned about getting injured. I'm going to slow down. Like, I've only seen people on TV say that guys are going to be that way, but guys... don't.
Haven't we said that about Andrew Luck, that he has to adjust the way he plays so he doesn't take as many hits, so he isn't injured? I mean, isn't that something we've talked about with Coach Mangini a lot?
Look at Andrew Luck's injuries compared to Carson Wentz. They're not the same. What Andrew Luck got hurt trying to extend the play. Mm-hmm. Carson Wentz didn't get hurt trying to extend the play. Carson Wentz has adjusted his game. He does not have the support. And let's just go with the quarterback room that changed. All right? Mike Groh, his offensive coordinator. Do you know what Mike Groh's specialty is?
No.
Oh, okay. He used to be a backup quarterback in college. He coached wide receivers, and now he's an offensive play caller in the NFL. So we've seen Carson Wentz lose his quarterback coach, lose his offensive coordinator in Frank Wright, and we think that's not going to affect him, and he doesn't have a running game. Those are the things that affected Carson Wentz the most this season, and those are the things I'm more concerned about compared to Carson Wentz. Is he my franchise quarterback, and is he going to change or adjust to the NFL and the contact.
How much of what you've seen from the Eagles is because Carson Wentz?
Oh, I think I'm not concerned about his numbers at all. I'm not concerned about his level of play at all. Yeah, you're talking about the issues with the Eagles this year. I don't lay any of that at the feet of Carson Wentz. He's putting up statistically the same profile year as he did last year, and last year he was going to be the MVP. I think he's an awesome player. Of all the young quarterbacks, aside from Mahomes, he'd be the guy I'd want more than anyone if you can tell me he's going to be healthy. He's also of all the
who
young...
Who can we tell right now, the young quarterback? No, we know they're going to be healthy. Give me one.
You can never say that, but if the end of my sentence was, but he's also the young quarterback, other than Deshaun Watson, that I'm most concerned about. If you're asking about his ability to stay healthy, like those two guys, I know how good they can be. I also know they have, to me, what is starting to be a concerning injury trend, and if he misses the rest of this year, that will...
I mean, we don't even know what his injury is now. We don't know if he has a sore back. We don't know if he's got a herniated disc in his back. Like, right now, he's got a sore back. And there's 32 starting quarterbacks. I believe 30 of them right now at this point in the season, week 15, they have a sore back. If they decide to err on the side of caution and keep him out of the game, they are doing the right thing long term. If we could start a franchise today and we start having a draft, Carson Wentz is going to be in them first three picks of. So I'm not concerned. It is a contact sport, and the things that he's gotten injured, broken wrist. What can stop that? Nothing. All right, torn ligaments, trying to get into the end zone. What can stop that? Nothing. What can stop having a sore back in the league? Nothing. It's all part of younger players developing that overall grit that it takes to carry them throughout their career. So I still got hell of confidence in Carson Wentz.
All right, the news this morning, Carson Wentz will not be playing as the Eagles face the Rams this weekend. Coming up, is the winner of tonight's game the best team in the NFL? We'll talk some Thursday Night Football next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. We're now joined by Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott. Bart's here. What's up, Bart?
Can't complain.
Don't complain.
You tried to destroy my show last Friday. You were in. I wasn't in here to keep you under control. You need a traffic cop. Y'all on the radio or something, just sitting going back and forth. Yeah.
I'm just living my best life. See,
See, was sending notes from
go,
afar.
Jim. Go. Definitely.
Bart, Pro Football Focus released their power rankings, the top teams. And when they did it, they found Drew Brees and the Saints coming out number one, followed by the Chiefs, Rams, Pats, and Chargers. Bart, you buying the Saints as the best team in the NFL today?
You can sell me that real estate, but I don't know if I want to buy it. They haven't looked the same, but what I do like about the Saints is their versatility. They're the most complete team, or one of the most complete teams, because I want to see how this Chiefs defense looks when Eric Berry comes back, because he's a guy that can make impact. But, you know, the Saints can win a phone booth game. We saw last week the Rams couldn't win a physical game. I know the Saints can win a physical game. They can get ugly and muddy it up with Kamara and with Ingram in between the tackles, and they're good at stopping the run. You know, but I don't, these Bears and these Colts are two teams that I'm buying stock in, because I just love the way they play. I love defensively how the Bears can, you know, shorten the game, and they can run the ball, and they can come up with enough creative plays on offense to be successful. You know, I'm always buying defense.
You're talking Pro Football Focus is top five, with Saints, Chiefs, Rams, Patriots, Chargers. And so you're looking outside of the top five teams that you think could potentially make a Super Bowl, could make noise in the playoffs. And to answer your question, Jenna, as far as the best team in football, you can make case for the Saints. Saints, Chiefs, Rams are obviously three high-scoring offenses in football. The Saints are the only one of those three with a top 10 defense.
Despite the way they played the last 2 weeks.
Absolutely. Last week, I don't want to underrate what they did last week against the Bucs. That's a team that had beaten them, that was dominating them through the first two-plus quarters of the game, and then the Saints scored 25 straight to win that game. So while they were underwhelming in the first half of that game, they played really well in the second half of that game. I don't think there is a clear, definitive best team in the league. If the Chiefs win tonight, everyone's going to say they're the best team in the league. If they lose, they'll be dropped to third. But what is interesting to me is what Bart was getting at, which is teams outside of the top five that could be dangerous. The Bears are really interesting to me, because we have seen teams with that type of makeup, if they can just get competent quarterback play, because they have enough weapons, that defense is tremendous, that team, and we saw them choke out the Los Angeles Rams. So they're a team that I might have in that top tier that right now is not there.
Yeah. I'm not as concerned about the Saints as some of the other teams at the top. You know, if you ask me, I'd much rather have the Saints defense than any of the other top defenses. And if I take that defense with Sean Payton as a play caller going against them other defenses, that's the combination I'm going to take. Forget about the quarterback. Forget about how they run their offense and have balance. Mm-hmm. Sean Payton, if you put him in the postseason game against that Kansas City defense, oh, man, they're going to rip that defense apart. That defense is not good. So that's a huge advantage that I see, and I believe that some of the holes that Kansas City have on the offensive side, but because the Saints, they're going to make them one-dimensional. Kansas City not getting any running backs.
Right.
You know, so how are they going to manufacture some type of running game? I don't believe, regardless of what Nick says, if they win tonight, they're the best team. The most consistent team throughout the season has been the Saints. And why? Because they can win a number of different ways, and you trust their defense in a big spot more than the other teams.
But the team that I'm going to elevate to number two is the Chargers, because they can establish the run. They have a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback that can get hot, that can give you explosive plays. But I love how they can go after the passer with the outside pass rushers. And this Derwin James kid, if you guys haven't paid attention to him, he's Cam Chancellor mixed with Earl Thomas, because he can play at that line of scrimmage, but he has some veteran moves. You know, when he intercepted.
He's the closest I've seen to Sean Taylor that has that body type.
Exactly.
Since Sean Taylor, we lost him. Skills in the middle of the field, great tackling ability, and still something we don't see.
Yes.
He provides that intimidation.
Right.
Now, I could see why you said the Cam Chancellor part of that.
Yeah, because you know he also can get off the hashes. See, Cam couldn't get off the hashes. Cam would come down, and he was an insert safety. This guy can close the hashes. He can play the middle third, but he makes you make decisions. His tackles are are violent.
Impactful.
And we always say big hits and turnovers change games, right? So big hits can energize your offense, your defense, mm-hmm. but also that makes guys understand that they got to pay $200 before they pass go. And what we saw last week was the intimidation factor, right? Because in the playoffs, you know, those shoulder pads stiffen up, things move a little faster, and teams get anxious when you can shorten the game and shorten the possessions.
Bart is right. When you get that four-game window of games you're breaking down, when you start to prepare, you go out the last four games. Now, you can get other games that you can look at, but that is the typical NFL study. We're going to study the last four yep. games. And let me tell you something. When you see that screen and you see a guy on the defender, he knocks someone in the offense off the screen, you know what you do? Hit rewind. What number was that guy? Okay, what coverage were they in? And you start to send messages
yeah.
3-4 weeks out. So Derwin James has done that. That's a great pickup by Bart.
I think the Chargers are in the argument for most talented, best team in the league. I agree yeah. with you there. They started 1-2. Since then, they are 10-1. They're 9-1. Pardon me. So they have played as well over the last 10 games as any team in the league. What I think kills them as far as realistic chance at making the Super Bowl is even if they win tonight, they still will not be in first place in their division. So they are in a position where they will almost assuredly, to get to the Super Bowl, have to win 3 road playoff games. Like, that's the part where the way the NFL playoffs work, they're just in bad luck that the only team with a better record than them is in their division. And even if they win tonight, they don't have the tiebreaker. If they end up overtaking the Chiefs, if they win tonight and then Kansas City stumbles against Seattle and they go from having to play 3 road playoff games to being the 1 or the 2 seed, then not only do I think they're in the discussion, I think they become the favorites in the AFC in that spot. But I just think if they have to be the wild card, that road is far too difficult.
I love that road. That's the road I've taken. And that road is better. I hate it having to buy, because if you play a good team coming off a bye and they jump on you early, it's over. See, what happens is that when you have to play that wild card, you're in playoff mode already. And if you're close to being healthy and you don't sustain any big-time injuries, you have the advantage. We've seen the Green Bay Packers come in as the wild card and win the championship. We've seen the New York Giants come in and win a championship.
Also seen the same evidence as far as those 1 and 2 seeds sleepwalking
yeah.
after having that bye.
I mean, when we walked into New England, you know, they were sleepwalking. We jumped on them, and they didn't know what to expect. Because what happens is it's natural, right? You don't know what to do that week, and you come off flat. We see this sometimes when teams come off byes, and they kind of have to figure it out.
Yeah.
And if you sleepwalk early in a half in the playoff game, it can be over with.
But we also know that since the NFL went to this playoff format, teams with a bye more than 30% of the time make the Super Bowl, and teams without a bye, it's less than 8% of the time. So while there are examples, and I understand particularly yeah. on teams that are maybe defensive focused, why if you are a little rusty and a team does jump out 7-0, it could be put you in a rougher spot. I think in general, it is far better to have one fewer playoff game to play and to have the home field advantage guaranteed at least in the first playoff game, if not in both of them, than to have the wild card route.
Quickly before we go to break, is there anything about the Saints team that worries you?
I mean, I think they're the most well-rounded team in football. I think these guys, they can run the ball, they can pass the ball, and their defense isn't great. But it's not the Rams have the 18th ranked defense.
They take right. the run away from you. People mm-hmm. can say, the numbers are distorted and everything. Oh, okay. Well, we're at the end of the season. They're still number one against the rush.
Yep.
And that is going to help in the playoff. These teams don't have a running game. Watch out. We've seen November, December, the game changes. You don't have a running game in the playoffs, you're going to be out of the playoffs.
They're the only team in this list, other than the Patriots, that has legitimate playoff and Super Bowl experience from the coach and the quarterback.
Sure.
Like, for all those reasons, that I totally understand why people would say they're the best team in football.
Watch out for Dallas. Dallas is scary, too, and they showed you the blueprint of how to beat the Saints. Limiting the possessions, running the ball, and being able to play good enough defense that they can keep you out of the end zone.
I like this segment. It was just why teams are good. That was my favorite
very
segment
positive.
So far. Bart, stick around. Coming up,
got
what
no
will
life,
it take for the Steelers to beat the Patriots? That's next on First Things First.
You got nowhere to go.
Nowhere.
Back here, First Things First, with Bart Scott. Bart, the NFL is serving up a big AFC matchup this weekend. Patriots and Steelers in a must-win for Pittsburgh. Steelers have lost 3 in a row. and lead the Ravens by just a half game in the AFC North. Bill Belichick, whose Pats have won five straight against the Steelers, was asked if there's any advantage facing a not-so-confident Pittsburgh team.
I think if you guys are around competitive guys, you wouldn't see that. So I don't really see that. I don't give that any credibility at all. Competitive people compete. That's what they do. And certainly that's what the Steelers are. So I'm sure we'll get their best. I think they'll get our best. We'll see what happens.
Part two questions.
NFL
for
need
you.
To find him, man. I'm tired of watching this crap, man. Open your mouth and speak. Like, come on.
You mean say more words or actually enunciate the words you are saying?
That was a dumb question. Whatever response you give, you ask a dumb question, okay? You get what you get.
Sometimes, because here's the defense of Belichick just quickly. If you ask him a football question with some precision, he will actually sometimes give you a very long answer, a historical answer. But if the question really was, what is it like playing a Pittsburgh Steelers team that isn't confident
you wasted your breath.
I do feel like
in the pool of reporters, you should have gave someone else the opportunity to ask the real question.
if we pull the rest of those questions, I guarantee you every answer got the same.
Well, he's always going to be drawling. He's going to be monotone.
Let me just say this.
Oh, you're going to defend
it may have
reporter?
Been a dumb question, but look, it was a question that our producers picked to use for the show. Okay. Was that answer from that question? That being said, what will it take for the Steelers to beat this Patriots team? And yes, I did defend that report.
I mean, they have to come up with something other than a linebacker-based defense. I'm so tired of seeing these linebackers out in space against the skill position players of the Patriots and getting exploited. Like, come on, come up with a different personnel. Can we take a linebacker out and bring in a safety, somebody that can actually stay with some of these people? That's why they always lose, because they want to remain who they are. It's like they have to have the Dick LeBeau four linebackers zone blitzing in at the same time. That's not how you beat Tom Brady. You beat Tom Brady playing two-man, making him throw in tight pockets, and you blitz him, you know, and you switch a game plan up. They know exactly where the Pittsburgh Steelers players are going to be. So then all you have to – then so what you try and do is you have to try and outscore them like they did last year, and that rarely works.
Let me ask you this, though, because I understand what you're saying, and while in years past, really doing anything differently defensively would have been better than what they've been doing since the Pats have averaged 35 a game against Pittsburgh over the last 5 years. But with this year's Pats team, where their offensive strength is actually their running game, where it is Sony Michel, couldn't it be good for the Steelers to have that heavier package instead of having an extra corner out there to have the extra linebacker out there? You look skeptical.
No, absolutely. No, it's not going to work.
Right.
Okay, so if they go small, like you're saying, won't Tom Brady just do what he always does when he sees a defense go small, check into a run and let Sony Michel gash him? Like, isn't that what we've said about the Patriots forever?
Go ahead, Bart.
Man, nobody cares. Listen, the way you lose to Tom Brady is by him throwing the ball. Him handing the ball off 45 times, I can care less. I'd rather die that way than die him airing it out, me trying to load the box and him finding a way to motion Gordon over and get him isolated on a linebacker in the slide or putting him somewhere and exploiting me over the top. I'd rather die slow.
But you know, because Bart's saying they're not going to have the patience either. And also, you're going to get a holding call. It's leaning in your favor if you decide to go that way. Tom Brady and them are not going to run the ball to victory in an explosive game like this. They're going to run it, and then set you up to be able to throw the ball. What Bart's talking about is doing things like Miami did. Miami came out. They gave him a certain look in the first half. In the fourth quarter, you watched that game, and they had a cat blitz come off the corner and smack
Brady.
Didn't even see him. Smacked him. And
folded
when Brady
up like
was
bad.
At the goal line, they did something different than other people don't do. You know what they did? They played Gronk one-on-one. They doubled Edelman and doubled James White. That's why he took a sack, because he saw James White shot. Last minute, and he tucked the ball down because he didn't want to throw an interception down there. So those were different things, very, very effective. Now, I can't rely on a miracle at the end of the game, but those are the types of things that allow the Dolphins to stay in that game.
Because when you play them and try and stop the run in a light box, what happens is he doesn't know who's coming. If you go out there with linebackers and he knows, okay, 5-0, right? 5-0 is, you know, we got these five. And what happens is when you have a lighter box out there, they don't know who's the designated rusher. That's how you cause some pause in Tom Brady. And we've seen that he's starting to flinch now. Those reflexes aren't as fast as they used to be, and he's not able to buy the time in the pocket like he used to. Then you look on the other side of the ball, they don't have a pass rush. So now you want to lean that, okay, they have to be patient, not get a penalty, not get a holding call, you know, and then they have to try and stop Ben Roethlisberger on the other side of the ball, which we know that he can put up points.
So you're saying New England doesn't have a pass rush?
No, they don't.
And Steelers obviously do. Steelers are one of the best pass rushers in football this year. New England bottom two pass rush in football. That, to me, is going to be the key here, is we have, for the better part of a decade, seen the Steelers try to slow down New England and fail at slowing down New England. The reason they were in position to win that game last year before Big Ben threw that interception was they scored with them. The reason if they are going to pull off the upset, even though it's at home this year, it's going to be in my eyes because they are able to match points with them. I do not think the Steelers are going to be able to hold New England in the teens. I think if they're going to beat them, it's going to be a score similar to how Miami beat them, absent of the miracle, where both teams get to 30 and Pittsburgh just has the ball last and is able to win. That's how they had them last year. They were down three at the goal line, and it should have gone to over. Jesse James had a touchdown, didn't. At the very least, they should have had overtime. Big Ben throws that pick, and the Patriots get away with
the
win.
One thing with New England, though, New England has struggled offensively. People look at the score of the Miami game, it's like, wow, they were really productive. No, they weren't.
It was all in the first half.
No, they blocked two punts.
Yep. Right.
They blocked two punts. They were not that effective offensively. So if you look at what they've done on the road in those losses, they have not been effective. For Pittsburgh got to be able to get after the quarterback, change up their coverages. I would start off with the little zone, have them throw the ball, and you got to come up and tackle.
Yep.
And I'm taking James White out of the game in passing situations. Brady, at this point, he really only wants to throw the ball about down the field. I'm talking about down the field 10 to 20 yards. I mean, 20 to 30 yards, about 10 times a game. When you watch him, that's all he's going to do. He's going to dink and dunk. He don't want, because you have to hold the ball longer in the pocket to be able to get it down the field, and he's tried to avoid that. So the Steelers, with that rush, if they don't get to Brady, they don't have a chance.
And Eric Mangini made a good point yesterday. Watch how focused this Patriots team is going to be coming out after what happened to them last week. They're going to button up every single little mistake that was made. They are as focused. They're going to go over every last square inch of detail of that game from last week. They're just going to be a completely focused team against a team
focused,
that doesn't seem to be
But let me tell you what, Mangini, a lot of times it's easier to believe in the Kool-Aid when you're there, when you're mixing it.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, Coach Mangini, he got all the Patriots in his background.
Yep.
Yeah, I listen to Coach Mangini, but also you got to be careful with some of those Pats takes. All right, they will be buttoned up, but let me tell you something. They linebackers, they ain't gonna be no taller, and they ain't gonna be no faster. They pass rushers, they ain't gonna be no better. They ain't gonna be able to get to the quarterback. They're gonna have to have stunts. They're gonna have to build a blitz to get there. And if Ben can buy it enough time, you can pick their secondary apart.
All right, Bart, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Coming up, are the Baltimore Ravens making the right move, sticking with Lamar Jackson, naming him their starter? That's next on First Things First. Thursday Night Football returns tonight as Philip Rivers and the Red Hot Chargers face off against Patrick Mahomes and the division-leading Chiefs in a very big AFC West showdown. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, NFL Network, and streaming on Prime Video.
No better way to cap off Thursday Night Football this year than this game, which could determine the one seed in the AFC.
I'm worried about the Chiefs, Nick.
Okay. I'm worried about their injuries, man.
Time for us to go viral. Check this out from last night's Hawks-Mavs game.
What are you doing?
DeAndre Jordan and Trae Young jokingly shoving each other. They get hit with double techs.
The
refs are right in this situation, because you have to realize the refs are intense. They have an intensity in doing these games. And then you're not watching these guys the whole time. Now, all of a sudden, you come in, you see guys pushing each other a couple times. They don't know that they're buddies and everything. They don't know that. Like, give the ref a break. Like, that's what you got to do. He doesn't know that.
Fair enough. But if the ref thought they were serious and thought Trae Young was really trying to scrap it with DeAndre, he should have ejected Trae Young for his safety and for stupidity.
This is what the refs do. They know all the basketball players, for most parts, are cowards. So they know.
We've gone to cowards now?
They are.
You've elevated your language.
That's part of the reason why you like the sport, Nick. Lack of contact. A bunch of cowards in
Okay, well,
NBA.
Again, you've gone from not tough guys, lack of contact, to now cowards?
Oh, as far as fighting is concerned, absolutely. Wow. That's where you could, that's the only club you can play that kind of joke, where a 5'3 guy jumps on a 7'7 guy. That's the only place it plays in the NBA.
All of a sudden, it's Muggsy and Manute Bol. It's 5'3 and 7'7.
Come All on, right, man. Moving on.
Come on, Trey, man. Trey can't whoop Jenna.
We're going to, that is true. We'll get to Lamar Jackson in a second, but first, check out a couple of highlights presented by Geico. Was this perhaps an NBA championship preview? Raptors, Warriors, KD driving, posterizes Serge Ibaka with the big slam. See?
They're going against definitely the best team in the East. I know Nick had other plans and everything. We're only in December, but Toronto,
the Raptors is the one seed.
Toronto going to be there in the end. They're going to be in the NBA Finals. They're the best team in the East. They match up well, even without Kawhi. Jenna, you talked this morning. You were shocked. Man, they've been so successful without Kawhi. 8 games without him, have 7 victories.
All right, Mavs Hawks, Luka Doncic sliding over to help on defense, rejects Trae Young.
Listen, Trae's been fine this year, but this is, and we said it at the time, a trade that could haunt the Hawks. Like, the fact that Luka was available at 3 when he shouldn't have been. He was. You had the opportunity to take him. Instead, they flip it for Trae and a future pick. Luka's playing so well, that future pick they got from Dallas might not be as good as the Hawks thought it was going to be. He is going to run away with Rookie of the Year.
Atlanta will still be a football city based on the way the team drafts.
In Philly, T.J. McConnell lobbing it up to Ben Simmons for the alley-oop.
I don't know how I feel about this Ben Simmons headband look. I know you spent some time with him. See, I think the game you saw was the last game he played without the headband. I don't know that I love the headband look, Philly. This is, by the way, that's a terrible loss for Philly. They'd been 14-1 at home. To lose a close game to Brooklyn at home,
man, if he learns how to shoot, he can wear a hoodie. He can wear a, I don't care what he wear out there on the court.
Watch
learn how to shoot.
This, Oak Ridge High School in Orlando, Niven Glover throwing down the insane 360 through the legs.
Okay, I hear Penny Hardaway at Memphis is after him, a couple other schools after him with offers. This is the nastiest high school dunk, in-game dunk I have seen. Ooh, between the legs.
We've seen that dunk win.
180, not a 360, a 180.
270 maybe.
Look.
When
he stops and jumps, he already turned facing the other basket.
That's a three-quarter spin. Three-quarter spin, see?
Oh, right. Yeah, just like the moon landing.
The moon landing.
Let's go back to football. Moving on to the Baltimore Ravens. They made it official. Lamar Jackson will be their true number one quarterback. That means Joe Flacco will be their true number one backup. The Ravens have gone 3-1 with the 22-year-old rookie under center. Their one-dimensional offense might not set them up for long-term success, but in the short term, it's keeping them in the playoff race. Lamar Jackson met the media after the decision was made.
It's common for a starting quarterback to call his team, it's my team. Are you able to say that, ready to say that? This is your team?
It's our team. All of us together. It's our team. I don't go out there and block. You know, I don't go out there and catch the ball. I don't make tackles. You know, I just do my part. It's all our team.
So you see the Ravens making the right call, going with Lamar Jackson?
That's the only call they got. That's the only way offensive they're going to be able to be effective. With Joe Flacco, we know their limits. We know that Joe Flacco, eventually it was going to come to this, of course. Anytime, as a player, man, they draft someone stronger, faster, eventually he's going to take your spot. Lamar Jackson is the future of the quarterback, if he is a starting quarterback in the league, because that's another question. But, yes, this is the right move for them moving forward. The team has momentum. They play a style for which they can survive with this running attack and him being a part of it. Limited passing, all right? I'm not going to challenge them down the field. I'm not going to throw a bunch of interceptions. Yeah, that's the best way for the Ravens to be able to get into the playoffs and try to advance in the playoffs. As you could see, they looked at Kansas City, had the lead in that part, nick and tuck back and forth in that game for a long time. I like the way that they went about that game plan. And in that game plan, they show they can face anyone in the league with Lamar Jackson. Yes, they should stay with Lamar.
I like teams that have a plan, execute the plan, stick with the plan. The plan when they drafted Lamar was, if Flacco's ineffective, if we're not playing well, or as this was the case, he gets dinged, we are going to go with Lamar Jackson and see how he goes. Flacco was really good in week one. And since week one was bad and the team was bad. After that dominating, I think, 48-3 victory over Buffalo, they were 3-5. He had 9 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, an 80 passer rating. It was time to see what Lamar could do. And what we have seen with them is, is what Lamar adds as a runner, and he doesn't, he's not turning the ball over at a super high rate because they're not letting him throw the ball that much. They are a better football team. If you're the Ravens, look at it from their opponent's perspective. They have Tampa and the Chargers and Cleveland in their final three games. Who are those teams hoping they would start at quarterback? Who are those teams more optimistic about their chance of their starting a quarterback? It's Flacco. They know how to game plan for Flacco. They know what his limitations are. Like, do what your opponent hopes you don't do, especially when there's the upside of we spent a first-round pick on this guy, giving him chance to develop in big-game situations with the Ravens a half game out of the divisional lead in the AFC North. Like, to me, this it would have been shocking if they had gone back to Joe Flacco.
I'm not making a case for Flacco, but maybe the next three opponents are okay opponents for this team to beat as a semi-one-dimensional offense, but could this be a long-term solution for the Baltimore Ravens? Eventually, teams are going to figure out how to stop him.
No, it's not a long-term solution. If they can't throw the ball, they will be, at best, a 500 team. I don't care how good their defense is. Wink Martindale, the defensive coordinator, man, he has been brilliant. He's going to have to come up with some touchdowns. All right, that defense is going to have to score a touchdown. When you cannot throw the ball, it's always going to be challenging. And with Lamar and the way they design plays now, they have no confidence in his arm because I see how they call the plays. Now, they might be able to make it through this season, but that's the reason why you draft him at the end of the first round. That's the reason why he's not in the top round, all right? It's challenging as far as him reading the coverage, just delivering the ball in anticipation, and that will continue until when? No one knows that.
Right. In order for him to be a successful starting quarterback, he has to drastically improve his throwing ability. And so, like,
So aren't we just putting a Band-Aid on the Ravens right now? Like, just get through this season and then we'll sort of figure it out?
What's the other option?
Well, I don't know what the other option is. I'm just
right.
Asking.
So you're going like what you're doing is they understand that Lamar Jackson is not a fully formed quarterback and might never be a fully formed quarterback. There's a reason he was a project, and as Steve mentioned, there's a reason as a Heisman Trophy winner he was available with the final pick of the first round. But with Joe Flacco, their offense might have more dimensions, but it's not better. Like, Flacco is limited enough as a passer right now and non-existent as a runner that if you have the benefit of our running game and defense is playing great and we're going to get this guy experience and in the offseason, we will see how much he develops. That's why, to me, it's a no-brainer. And they've won as many games in the month with Flacco as they had, Lamar in the previous 2 months with Flacco.
Right. Absent the price you have to pay for Flacco, that organization is not like, yeah, you know, some man, we got the right guy. He's in the developmental stages. They're trying to be patient with him. They realize the cookies, even though the cookies say, man, you can take him out in 14 to 16 minutes. No, you need to look in there because right now he's gooey. All right? Unless you want gooey, ooey cookies that can make you sick to your stomach, that's the only way that you can continue to move on with Lamar Jackson. You have to understand, I need explosive players outside. Right. They need to be able to draft some guys who can run some reverses to go sideways to be able to make him effective. But you are right. It is a Band-Aid for now, but that's what a lot of teams do. Flacco is at the end of his career. Lamar Jackson is at the beginning of his career. We can have more patience then because we've already given our patience to Flacco. Flacco's already won the franchise a Super Bowl. So right now, we need to appropriate our patience to Lamar Jackson and realize football is going to be played a different way. Change the way you look at it because they can win a lot of games as good as they are special teams-wise and as good as they are defensively with Lamar at the quarterback currently.
And can they win playoff games in this setup?
I mean, they're going to have a – if they get a home game –
they almost just beat Kansas
City.
Yeah,
I mean, they're going to have to have the same exact – that's what I was going to say.
Or their defense is going to learn to have to score a touchdown.
A great, great defense, dominant running game. They will be – can they win three in a row, make the Super Bowl? No, but can they beat anybody if they play the way they did?
That franchise has never had a great offense. Every time they've won and won big, they've done it with defense. So, yes, they can do it again with Lamar Jackson.
All right, good stuff. Take a break. Coming up, are the Saints the best team in the NFL? That's next. This is First Things First. Back here on First Things First, we are going viral. When the Lakers and the Heat played early this week, all eyes were on LeBron and D-Wade. But Lance Stephenson was there, too, and he was mic'd up for the game. Oh, take a listen to this.
That was awesome, man, with a capital A. Good job, good job. Oh, I like that dunk. Ooh, that dunk was sick, boy. Now, that was amazing. Now, that was amazing. Oh, he make that, I'm leaving. Oh, I got to go.
Lance was such an exuberant teammate.
Oh, my God.
I remember one time I was mic'd up, and I was mic'd up often with NFL Films, thanks to NFL Films. And I was talking trash to some guy in Tampa Bay, a young guy. He was like, oh, you're talking an awful lot because you must be mic'd up. I said, if they ever come to you and ask you to be mic'd up? He was like, no. I said, okay, well, shut up until they do, all right? If they ask you to be mic'd up, they want you to talk. They believe you're going to say something, all right? Or they believe you're going to do something. With me, there's both. There's neither.
Wait, did they ever tell you you could say this, you can't say, try to avoid this, try to...
No, and
they
you can
just
say anything.
Mic you up. Okay.
Myself and Reggie White, they told me the people at NFL Films were the only two to ever be mic'd up for the entirety of a game that they didn't have to bleep out any cuss words.
Oh, wow.
Chris wasn't big curses till he started hanging out with me.
I was just going to say.
I've been a bad influence in that regard.
Okay. That's all.
But, yeah, that was let me ask you.
I looked at the list of people who I could be with, and they're like, Nick Wright. I was like, dang.
Did you tell guys you were mic'd? Give guys a heads up.
No.
Like, oh, okay. Oh, that's something that NBA guys part. You always
have. Oh, yeah, them cowards.
I know.
Hey, buddy, watch what you're saying. Don't be spicy.
Be careful. I'm wearing a microphone.
No, I'm for real with it. I'm coming up in you. I'm talking about you, your mama. Yeah, it all started when I was wearing that uniform.
Time for some stories to start your morning. Dwayne Haskins. NFL draft stock skyrocketed the last 3 weeks of the season, but the Buckeye quarterback says he's focused on Washington, and rightfully so, and will make his NFL draft decision after the Rose Bowl. See your thoughts.
I wish he would stay in school. They have him ranked as a top 10 player. It becomes hard when you look at the finances of it, but he's got a situation. He doesn't need the money. He's got a great team coming back at Ohio State, and for quarterbacks are different. Yes. I prefer for him to stay in college because the NFL will be there. You can play late in your 30s until you're 40. So for me, I would learn as much football in that rarefied atmosphere as being the big man on campus before. I would much rather him next year at 21 be the quarterback of the Ohio State Buckeyes than be the quarterback of the New York Football Giants. And people are ripping him to shreds in this city.
And you'd be saying that even if he wasn't playing for your alma mater. It's about the player. Yeah,
anyone
who
knows me and thinks that I'm just saying something about my alma mater, they can go out and
that's fine.
Whatever.
I was
of course.
If you're any position but a quarterback and you're a near lock top 10 pick, I would say leave. Even if you have more to learn because of the injury risk and because of how short a lot of those careers are. Quarterback's the one spot. We saw Andrew Luck come back to school. He was going to be the guaranteed not top 10, number one pick, and he went back to school.
Mark Sanchez, Mitch Trubisky. Look at their career. 1 year as a starter in college.
Left early. And so I'm not saying that Haskins has to come back, but I don't think it'd be a wrong move to come back because he's a quarterback.
All right, to the NBA now. Big game for Anthony Davis last night. 44 points, 18 rebounds, and a win over the Thunder. See, what'd you think of the Brow last night?
Oh, he's amazing. Now, this is why it'd be so intriguing for him and LeBron. Man, if LeBron's got some good juice left in it, man, I'd love to see him with the Brow because there is no answer. Eastern Conference, Western Conference, they got to go to outer space somewhere to be able to find something. He can shoot the ball from deep. His skill level being with the dribble. He can defend all the positions and all the pick and roll. He can play half-court offense. He can play up and down offense. So he's a special, special player. One day he will be the best player in the NBA.
Right, and that day is coming sooner rather than later. And LeBron's never played with a true great big man. Like, the best true big man he's played with is Zydrunas Ilgauskas.
Come on, Tristan Thompson.
Oh, Bosch and Kevin Love, I don't consider true big men. They turn themselves into stretch fours. But absent of LeBron in his future, back-to-back games with 40-plus for Anthony Davis. He did it last night against the number one seed in the West and the number one defense in all the NBA. That was a great
game. LeBron's favorite big man is Big Z.
That's what I said. It's his best big man, too.
He loves that Big Z.
Absolutely.
All right, Toronto beat the Warriors by 20 points last night, despite Kawhi being sidelined with a bruised hip. Kyle Lowry stepped up, 23 points, 12 assists. Raptors are now 7-1 without Kawhi in the lineup this season. That's how good they are. CeCe, how impressive is that, along with the win last night?
Oh, it's been very impressive. When you take out a superstar, we just haven't seen teams be that productive. And forget Golden State. They got several superstars. When they have any one of them out, you see the productivity of that team suffer from it. What they've done is, and Nick and I, we've talked about Toronto extensively. their basketball development. Like, we were concerned about Nick Nurse as far as we don't know.
He was an unknown.
We knew that from a how did he cut his teeth in the league, that was on the offensive end. So we thought he might be able to add a couple wrinkles to what they do offensively. They were already a good defensive team because that's the kind of things that Casey, their former coach, taught them. But they're younger guys, how they're developing. And I think because their bench, they've done this for 2 or 3 years as far as their bench being so strong, that this year I think we're going to give them credit. And you can start to see the margin for which they get, that offense starts out. They're outstanding in half-court setting. They're outstanding in the first quarter and the third quarter. And that lets you know that they're so well coached. But this is impressive what they're doing collectively as a team. And, Nick, there's a few guys within that that you like specifically.
Listen, Pascal Siakam's development from year 2 to 3, if we're being honest, I'd like to see that type of development between the last in this offseason of Ben Simmons, a guy who Pascal Siakam is not near the athlete, the player Ben Simmons is, couldn't shoot last year either.
Right.
Developed a shot.
Yeah.
Somehow
he was
said
a defender.
He was just a defender.
Yep.
He was just a defender.
Not a good ball handler as Ben.
Same draft class as Ben Simmons. Nowhere close to the profile at any point in his career. And has turned himself outside of 6 feet into a far better offensive player.
You thought you'd like to see that same out of Ingram with the Lakers, right?
Listen, so some of that is the guy locking himself in a gym, and some of that is the infrastructure. And with Toronto, I give a lot of it to the infrastructure because OG Anunoby, we see him in from year 1 to year 2 develop. I'm seeing Serge Ibaka recapture something that I thought was gone from him. In those conference semifinals against the Cavs, he was unplayable. And yes, I thought we were seeing
he lost all
the end of him. And I want to give credit to their leader because Kawhi's their best player. But the leader of this franchise for the last half decade has been Kyle Lowry. And Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan are brothers. They love each other. And he was devastated by DeMar DeRozan being traded. They both felt somewhat betrayed. And the fact that he has kept his level of play, he leads the NBA in assists, and not let that spill onto the court is a credit to him.
And we didn't know how he was going to react because he reacted, he was so sad.
Yeah.
And he was so shook that the organization was changing, he didn't know. And he wasn't playing great basketball. He just now recently came out of his shooting slump. But what Nick is talking about, these are intricate parts. And Steph Curry seemed to have a hard time with him in some of the matchups. So going forward, I'm looking forward to seeing how they continue that.
Quickly before we move on, how much credit do you give to this coaching staff for being able to bring just a few pieces in and make such a big
turnaround? I said I wouldn't fire Dwayne Casey. I thought Dwayne Casey was a really good coach. I thought LeBron was leaving, and that's all they needed. They won 59 games last year. Just couldn't get through LeBron. They did fire Dwayne Casey. It now looks like it was the right decision, even though Dwayne's a good coach and doing a good job in Detroit. Like, Nick Nurse and that and Masai Ujiri, the GM, that whole organization, they're the number 2 offense, the number 5 defense.
Yes.
They have a really good record with Kawhi. They're somehow unbeatable without Kawhi. They just went on a back-to-back against the Clippers in L.A., a Clippers team that briefly was leading the West, beat them, then beat a rested, full-strength Warriors team when they're on a back-to-back. It was – last night's game shocked me. If I were known to bet NBA basketball, I might have bet a few dollars on the Warriors
Nick
last night.
Nick and I said that the Warriors are going to send the message. Toronto won the initial meeting.
Yep.
They wouldn't see them again unless they made it to the finals. Nick and I talked about they're going to be talking before the game. Yeah. Hey, man, let's go out here, national audience. Let's show them something. Toronto showed the world something.
I thought the Warriors were going to win this game convincingly when I thought Kawhi was going to play. When I heard Kawhi midday was out, I loved my Warriors bet. And I mean, of course it lost, but doesn't matter. I mean, that is, to me, the best win anybody has in the NBA all year was what the Raptors did last night in Golden State.
Road trip to Toronto.
Oh, that's a good city.
Let's
now.
Go.
It's a good city now. C's got
now,
folks
now
up there.
Now you said something.
See?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
Okay.
There we go. Back to the NFL. Pro Football Focus released their power rankings of top teams in the National Football League, and Drew Brees and the Saints came out number 1, followed by the Chiefs, Rams, Patriots, and Chargers. See, I'll start with you. You buying the New Orleans Saints as the best team in the NFL?
I got a lot of confidence in what the Saints are doing. If you look at where teams started out this year, and a person that we haven't mentioned, Dennis Allen, their defensive coordinator, because this defense has been much maligned through the years. But last year, they started off really, really slow. Their season was ended because of the Minneapolis Miracle. Did we forget that? Did we think? I mean, Nick and I talked about how a better matchup we thought for the Philly. Saints were last year for Philly than the Vikings were. Now, the Vikings in that game, I don't know who would have beat them with that crowd and everything, but that confidence, it just continued this offseason, what they're doing, their ability to be able to run the ball, pass the ball, give the ball, get anyone in the back. Tyson Hill coming off as a backup quarterback and the wrinkles they have, special teams-wise, they are strong. And also what we've seen with teams, because they have the number one rush defense, people think, well, people haven't been patient enough. Then they get in the game. It's kind of like the Buster Douglas, Mike Tyson thing. Everyone's got a strategy. Then you get in the game and you start racing, trying to chase after the Saints offense. Mm-hmm. And then you don't run the ball. And the next thing you know, at the end of the day, you're like,
what happened?
We only have 14 carries. So I got a great deal of confidence in a guy also, because you're going to need to, you need to have one of these guys, a guy that can make three or four throws at the end of the game. And Drew Brees, I would love to be able to see him play Patty Mahomes or someone else like that. But when you talk about who can run the ball, who can stop the run, and who's got a guy that's pulling the trigger that you got that kind of confidence in, that's why I have the Saints as my best team in the NFL.
They're the team that I think people should have the most confidence in. And I'm going to use the word CUs because it's clear there's three teams that are better than everybody at the moment. Now, maybe the Chargers will get themselves in that discussion. The Patriots have been kind of grandfathered into it. But Saints, Chiefs, and Rams have been the cream of the crop all year. The Saints are the only of those three teams that I think can beat a good team on a day their offense is bad. Because they can beat you, they can grind it out on the ground, and they have a legitimate defense. I don't think the Rams can beat you if Goff and Gurley have an off game. I know the Chiefs can't beat you if Mahomes is bad, especially now that Kareem Hunt's gone. So the Saints are the team who I think don't have to be firing on all cylinders to win a playoff game. They, you know what I mean? If in their
but
first.
What happened against that, in that Dallas game? That was a game where this Saints offense wasn't playing that well.
I'm not saying that they're going to win every game, and I'm not saying that they're unbeatable. I'm saying that Dallas game to me is almost the point I'm making. Their offense was as bad as it could be, and they were right there. Like, they were playing a great defense with a terrible offensive performance. But if the Chiefs had that offensive performance, because I think Chiefs' offense is better than the Saints, but if the Chiefs had that offensive performance, it wouldn't be 13-10.
Right.
It'd have been 27-10 Dallas, and the Chiefs wouldn't have been in the game late. That's the distinction.
What makes the Saints team so good? What is it about them? Is it that they're a complete team, that they're so focused and so strong on both sides of the ball? What is it about this team that you have so much confidence in?
Well, for one, they have the organizational support. Like, this is a winning organization. Sean Payton, him and Mickey Loomis, man, Jeff Ireland, man, they're some of the best in the business as far as picking talent, picking the type of personalities, what they do for the players. They got one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Sean Payton, I believe, is underrated as one of the elite coaches we have in this game, and he's one of the great play callers. Also, Sean Payton's one of the great motivators. Of all the teams we have six teams listed. Sean Payton is the one coach besides Belichick that I know after the game I'm not going to say, did he forget to run the ball?
Mm-hmm.
So I have a lot of confidence in that. Andy Reid will get to the press box and be like, we only what? Yeah, you forgot to run the ball. McVay, I see that with Todd Gurley all the time. I'm wondering. I look at halftime, I'm like, why has Todd Gurley not touched the ball?
That was the Bears game. So, first half touches.
So I get concerned about that. Sean Payton relieves that. Sean Payton comes from, even though he's an offensive coach, he's mentored by Bill Parcells. And the things that he does in big game situations is far more dependable, and I like that.
And as Chris likes to remind us a little more often than I would like, there is no replacement for experience. And this team, like, you look at the other three teams. Jared Goff's played in one playoff game. Pat Mahomes never played in a playoff game. Drew Brees won a Super Bowl. You look at even the coaches. Sean McVay's coached in one playoff game. Andy Reid's got a lot of playoff experience. But Andy Reid, as good as they've been in Kansas City, he's won one playoff game since he was the Eagles head coach. So, like, if we're talking about coaching quarterback experience of the three best teams, Drew Brees and Sean Payton have the other two teams trumped by far.
All right, so you got your Saints, Chiefs, Rams, Pats, and Chargers. Give me a team outside of the top five you like.
Listen, I think the Bears are dangerous. I think all they need is a game. I think they need Mitch Trubisky to have a Nick Foles type of six good quarters, mm-hmm. because the like I think
their
they could win. I think they can win a playoff game with a bad offensive performance, much like the Eagles did against the Falcons. I think they now they're not going to have the home field that the Eagles had. I think that defense is that good that if Trubisky is just competent and then catches fire for seven possessions, I think that's a dangerous team.
Because the Texans have such a good defense this year under Romeo Cornell, he's coming back running that after Bravo went on to be the head coach, and Deshaun Watson on that big stage. If you take his ability to be able to make plays, I'm concerned about the red zone offense. It's hard for me to believe that there's only two teams worse than them as far as red zone offense, but his dynamic playmaking ability, I'd like to see DeAndre Hopkins in the playoffs. We haven't been able to see that. So that combination, J.J. Watt, comeback player of the year, that force going against some of those teams in the AFC that are up and down.
And the Texans very alive for the two seeds still, thanks to the Pats' loss this past weekend despite their own loss. And one thing, if you look at Deshaun Watson, last year when he was great, turned the ball over a lot. The beginning of this year, first handful of games, turned the ball over a lot. When they've been on this winning streak, he has been as good as just about anybody in football, not throwing interceptions and still making big plays. That's part of his progression. That Texans team, offensive line, running game, and the red zone, I put on the coaching, the play calling, but they have a ton of talent, pass rush, quarterback, wide receivers.
All right, time to pay the bills. Got to take a break. Coming up, a Hall of Famer says the end is near for Tom Brady. Yep, that's what he said. That's next. Twin brothers defend their titles in a big night of championship fights on Fox PBC, December 22nd, only on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Back here, first things first, with Bart Scott. And with the Patriots about to win their 10th straight AFC East title, Tom Brady at age 41 is defying the odds, just for the record, 41, Bart, not old. But while Brady's still on pace for 28 touchdowns, his stats on the slight decline, one Hall of Famer has noticed. Warren Moon said in an interview that the numbers are starting to show that there is a deterioration coming. Bart Scott, what do you make of what Moon had to say?
I mean, Moon should know, right? He played like 100 years in Canada, then he played like, you know, 15 years in the league. So he understands the process. You know, Father Time is undefeated. And, you know, I think what you have to ask yourself is, should Tom Brady be asked to carry a team now? Because I feel like it's, you know, the team's responsibility. I look at all the older quarterbacks in the league. I look at Phillip Rivers. I look at Drew Brees. I look at Ben Roethlisberger. What do they all have? Elite running backs, right? They have elite running backs, elite defenses. Who's been Tom Brady's great running back over the past couple of years? Cam Damon, right?
I mean, his best running back's actually been receiving the ball as his number one trait, in James White. Like, or LeGarrette Blount the Super Bowl year when he had
right.
the 18
mm-hmm.
touchdowns.
So the shelf life of Tom Brady is aging faster than maybe even Drew Brees. Like, we all are astonished at how great that Tom Brady's playing at 41, but Drew Brees will be 41 before you know it. I think he'll play better because he has a better supporting cast. He's not asked to do so much. All he's asked to do is make plays, you know, all the time, not make all the plays. And Tom Brady's asked to make all the plays. You know, when you can turn around and you can hand the ball off to an Ingram, Kamara, a Le'Veon Bell, or Melvin Gordon, then it takes a load off. We saw this late in John Elway's career, too, when you get Terrell Davis. So now you're asking him to do too much.
That saved John's reputation, because John was a big-time failure.
Yeah. Just 0-3 in the Super Bowl.
Yes, and then he gets those two wins with a dominant defense and a running team at the end of his career.
Don't you think that's one of the reasons the Patriots surprised all of us by using one of those first-round picks on a running back? We talked a lot about the Patriot draft. It was a given. Of course they're going to draft a quarterback at some point. They didn't have a backup, remember?
It makes sense. They're trying to support Tom by getting a weapon.
But
it
was a late-round weapon, and a guy who had a tremendous national championship run or in the playoffs.
Well, not a late round weapon. It was a first round pick, late first round.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I'm saying they hadn't drafted a running back in the first round since Lawrence Maroney a decade ago. So I think that they saw what you're saying, which is the thing to help an aging quarterback is a competent running game, and we can't just piecemeal it together. It can't be guys that the Jets cut that we turn into 600 yard backs we've done in the past. We need a guy we can actually hand the ball ball to 20-plus times like they were doing when they were playing their best football in the middle of this season. That's when Sony Michel was playing his best.
Yeah, and I would be upset if I'm Tom Brady because he's taking a hometown discount, and they haven't put the best personnel. Like, don't ask me to take a hometown discount and you go out
Forward
and you don't
the
get,
money.
And you know, and you don't get me a weapon. You know, so I think, you know, it's more on the New England Patriots and not giving him the pieces so that he can, you know, and maybe ate some french fries too. Maybe ate one of them nightshade vegetables late at night because he's looking like he's slowing down a little more in the last couple of years.
See, just remind the audience that doesn't know why, because you don't, there's a lot of guys, and I'm not just talking about analysts, I'm talking about guys that played in the league that can criticize Tom Brady, and you will, this is what you'll do with it, say, I do not care, you do not know what you're talking about. Warren Moon is maybe one of three people that can say something about Tom Brady, and your ears will perk up. Why?
Because Warren is such a student of the game. He's still involved in the game, and he's such a lover of the quarterback position. It was kind of, he was like a scientist. So Warren Moon, we talk about Cam Newton with his dimensions like we've never seen that at quarterback. But as far as brain, shoulders, I'm talking about real body, legs, athlete. Warren Moon's the best athlete that's ever played quarterback.
And he's the only guy that actually knows what it's like to play at a high level at Brady's age.
I mean, at 42, he started, you know, 10 games in this league. He still was throwing 20 touchdown passes. So for me, Warren Moon, and because he's connected, you look at Warren Moon's resume, he hasn't said a whole bunch of things criticizing quarterbacks. Warren is still studying high school quarterbacks. He's still studying college quarterbacks. So for me, when I heard it, it was like, okay, it was like when I was E.F. Hutton. When E.F. Hutton talks, you know, you start to listen. So it does give more credibility, not only the way he played, he's still connected to the game, and he was such a freak, I'm talking about, of nature. Warren Moon was the kind of guy, you don't necessarily want to be in the shower with him. Because I played with him.
Well, I'm talking about, nobody.
No, just listen to me. Just listen to me. Don't let your mind go. Just get
it. It's already there.
Because there's certain guys in the locker room, I'm talking about, they stacked. I'm talking about ripped.
You think you
got a six-pack? They got a 12-pack, and they got three over here on the side. There's certain guys that, and Warren Moon, at an advanced age, I'm talking about always lifted weights, always took care of his bodies, always took pride in how strong and how, man, he was bench pressing late in his career. So that's the type of thing when I'm saying.
Okay, you brought it back to me. I'm with you now.
Ricky Williams, another guy you don't want to be in the shower with.
He was ahead of the curve.
He had piercings and all kinds of stuff before Ricky Williams.
I got a list too.
But here's the other thing Warren Moon said in these comments, which I thought was really interesting. And he's absolutely right. The stats back it up. He said, you used to never want to blitz Tom Brady. That was the way to get killed.
Yeah.
Now you can blitz Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier that the corner blitz in the second safety half against blitz, the Dolphins, yeah, or the safety blitz,
it just rolls up. Even during a sack, but right before the halftime, he just folded up. He didn't know what to do. His reflexes are starting to slow down.
Three elements to a great quarterback, right? Arms, legs, and brain.
Yes.
One of them, Warren Moon says, you absolutely have to have, which is your legs. And he says that is the one part of Tom Brady's game that is deteriorating a little bit. Why is that so important?
It is because we don't realize the thousands and thousands of dropbacks that they've done in their career, even in their youth, just planting, going straight back, getting to the top of the pocket and coming back in the pocket. Like, it wears out your legs. If you look at quarterbacks that we dear near and dear, Elway, what caused him? His legs.
Yep.
Dan Marino. Dan can throw it today. I don't care where Dan is for what. There's two things about Dan Marino. He's somewhere today looking good, and he's somewhere where he can throw the ball because his arm
never left him,
but their legs and their power to be able to command that little 3x3 box that you have to be able to command, that's the difference.
And people don't realize, just like throwing a punch, you throw a punch with your legs, you throw a football with your legs. It's all about the transfer of weight and weight distribution to be able to throw that ball down the field.
And that's where, if his legs are starting to go even just a little bit,
write that down.
Because that's
why he loses all his fights.
Oh.
You throw it from the hips.
Chicken legs.
I'm 2-0 in my fight, 2-1 in my fighting career of a 34 years old. But here's the other part of it.
He gave himself a win.
No, I gave myself a loss. I was being fair. That's the one I tapped out in.
That's
either here nor there. Now to the point that Brady's never had the strongest. He ain't never had Marino's arm.
Yep.
Brady's had the greatest brain of maybe any quarterback ever. It's why a lot of coaches that have coached Brady have then
got to push back a little bit, man. He's had a Carson Palmer type of a strong arm. Brady used to air that thing out, man. He can throw that. This how his I measure. This is how I measure arm.
His arm is
it's above average. Rate.
Oh, yeah, yes. I know it's above average. My point is, when we say Marino, we're talking about one of the three greatest arms in football history. And so, if your arm,
he did not have the arm of Marino and Elway. But let me tell you something, 99% of them didn't have their arms.
Of course. And so, but the point that I was trying to make is, even if with an arm like Marino, once your legs start to go, the arm don't matter anymore. Nope. If when you don't have that 99 out of 100 arm, when your legs start to go, that's where you can start to see real deterioration. Mm-hmm.
Tell you what, they're going to have to figure something out because people are starting to get the book on him. They're going to start blitzing him and making him throw in tight pockets. And he's not being able to climb. And if Sony Michel can't be healthy and can't be effective, they're going to struggle in the playoffs, especially because now looking at their record, they're going to have to take that show on the road where we've never seen them have the success that they've had when they don't have the bye. It's important that they get this win. This is a must win this week for both teams.
Yep.
All right, took 20 years, but they finally got the book. They figured out. Finally, they got it. Whew.
A lot of guys,
we're going to get you a win, man. We're going to get you a win.
Not them, 20 years.
I said I'm 2-1.
Stick around, Bart. Coming up is tonight, Patrick Mahomes' MVP moment. Where's Mangini?
See, he knows. I only got one move, but it's effective.
Thursday Night Football returns tonight as Phillip Rivers and the Red Hot Chargers face off against Pat Mahomes and the division-leading Chiefs in a big AFC West showdown. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, NFL Network, and streaming on Prime Video.
Chiefs win this game, and they lock up the division, essentially. Or they do lock up the division. Chargers win this game, and they are right there for the one seed.
Back here with Bart Scott, time for today's Subway Choice moment. Let's talk about tonight's game. Two of the top teams in the AFC. Injuries could play a factor, though. Chargers running back Melvin Gordon and Chiefs wideout Tyreek Hill, both questionable. Patrick Mahomes, though, well aware of what is at stake in this one.
The Chargers are a good team, a team that is really on a hot streak right now, and you're playing basically for the AFC West title. And so you go out there and try to get yourself ready to go physically and mentally to win a football game.
These are the game. These are the ones you dream about when you're little. These are the ones you talk about in the offseason, having a chance to play to keep your division champ hopes alive and to, you know, get your spot in the postseason. So, and these are the games you want to be in.
All right, Bart, big one tonight in the AFC. What's the key to this game?
Well, I want to see if the Chargers can imitate what the Ravens did, because they beat Patrick Mahomes to a pulp. And I wonder how much he can recover from that. I mean, he got away with a lot of sins. I mean, the no-look pass thrown across his body on 4th and 9, you know, can he match Phillip Rivers, or really can Phillip Rivers match him and really put it in his hands? I really love what Kansas City is doing on defense. I want to see what Eric Berry's going to bring to the table if he's able to play. But I love what Chris Jones is doing because he's giving them balance from the inside, 11 and a half sacks.
And a sack in an NFL record 9 straight games within a season. Like the Chiefs defense is not good. But there's one thing they do well: attack the quarterback.
Right.
Justin Houston got the sack, the strip sack at the end of regulation that could have won them the game. They missed the field goal. We know D Ford's been playing like it's a contract year all year. And Chris Jones up the middle. So they're not a good defense. I'm not making that case. But horrible. They get to the quarterback and they can force some turnovers. It's the one thing they do well.
Can Eric Berry man the middle and control some of these big plays that they've been giving up? But to do that, you know, Patrick Mahomes is going to have to score points, because the reason that they are getting so much success rushing the pass is because they're ahead in a lot of games, so they're making teams one-dimensional. You know, that remains to be seen if Melvin Gordon can come here and shorten the game, take some of the possessions out of the game and put pressure on Mahomes.
Yeah, I don't think Melvin Gordon's going to play. We know about the Chiefs, their running back situation as far as their frontline guy out of the league now. Also, Spencer Ware out of tonight's game. What are they going to do? So who can manufacture from Andy Reid and calling plays, and from the Chargers standpoint, who can manufacture some running game without their top? That's my number one thing going into the game. Whoever's able to do that is going to make their quarterback far more comfortable. Watch out on the Chargers side. Guy is really underrated. We've been talking about Amari Cooper as far as his route running. I believe that route runners in the NFL are dying, and I believe that they call more play concepts just for guys to get to a certain area. They don't rely.
Keenan Allen's one of the best route runners, really underrated. On this field, I believe he's going to have a significant advantage. I believe they're going to throw the ball 40 times, too. So I look for the Chargers to really be able to take advantage, be able to get the ball out of their hands, get the ball to their athletes against that secondary, which is probably the biggest question mark for the Chiefs. This is going to be a good football game. I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Chargers were able to put it together and pull off this big upset tonight.
If they are able to pull off the upset, it'll be the first time in quite some time the Chargers have beaten Kansas City. Yeah. They've lost seven in a row. Phillip Rivers lost seven in a row to Kansas City. Lost four in a row at Arrowhead to Kansas City. The Chiefs are 20-1 in their last 21 games against AFC West opponents. Now, you mentioned their starting running backs out of the league. Spencer Ware is out of this game, so they're on their third string running back. Sammy Watkins is not going to play in this football game. Tyreek Hill should play.
Yeah, I wouldn't depend on Sammy Watkins the rest of the year.
Sure. Right. All right. I mean, that's been the tendency with
them. They got Kelvin Benjamin.
I believe Andy Reid's going to utilize him.
Red zone, maybe.
And so, the point, Tyreek Hill was limping around 4 days ago. At the end of that football game. This is where the Thursday night can hurt a team because their number one option was injured on Sunday. I think he's going to play, but how effective will he be? Now, Travis Kelce has been a monster. Not really these last 6 weeks. Last 6 weeks, an average game for him has been 8 catches, 100 yards, and a touchdown. But with no Watkins, no Kareem Hunt, no Spencer Ware, a limited Tyreek Hill.
Chargers can focus solely on Travis Kelce.
Can you focus on Travis Kelce? Right. Can you try to see how much punch Tyreek Hill really has? And then you're talking about Chris Conley, DeMarcus Robinson. You're going down the depth chart of guys. Because the Chiefs cannot win a low-scoring game. Like, their lowest scoring games this year have been 26, 27, 27. They don't have any experience in a low-scoring game.
Last week's game was a low-scoring game.
And they almost lost it.
They do have experience in a low scoring game. Last week it was 17-17, 2 minutes to go. That right there is a good test for them. They've been playing track meet. Now, that game right there, Baltimore slowed them down. So I believe that there is some confidence in if we able. But do they have confidence against a guy who can throw the ball? Now, that part I don't think they have confidence in, or they definitely don't have any experience.
Set up, Nick, what this game means for both teams.
So Kansas City wins this game. They are in perfect position to get the number one overall seed. If they win this game, they only have to go 1-1 in the rest of the way to get the number one seed, and one of those games is a home game against the Raiders. They no longer would have to go to Seattle to get the number one seed. If they lose, they are still the number one seed. But they have no margin of error anymore. If they were to lose to Seattle, then the Chargers could jump over them.
Right.
They also, if you don't win your division, you go all the way to the 5 line. Like, that is why this game's so critical. One of these two teams can finish with the second best record in the AFC and end up the 5 seed. So that's where we're at with this. If the Chargers lose this game, they are locked into the 5 seed.
And they bring the Patriots back into it, because the Patriots, they beat the Steelers, then you go to Seattle and lose. I've been on teams like that. We had the home field the whole season.
Yeah.
2001. Then we end up in the NFC Championship. You know what? They iced that field down at Giant Stadium. We had to come on the road, Dante Culpepper, and it was a wrap. 41 bagel. Because we stumbled
to the
finish line.
The regular season. Yeah.
Yes, two of three games we lost. So Kansas City, they do need this win.
You know, Tyreek Hill would have been one of those candidates that you would say that could help you manufacture a run game. But with him being injured, if I'm the Superchargers, what I'm doing is I'm focused on him early in the game, and I'm going to make sure that pill or that shot wears off real fast. I'm bracketing him. I'm hitting him wherever he goes.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I'm making sure I take him to the ground. I'm falling on that leg. Okay.
You believe he's going to get a little shot, a little assist, and a little painkiller?
Yeah, absolutely. He's going to go get
on a Thursday night game. You need some help.
He's going to get the Teradol shot, right? And he's going to make sure that, you know, or he's going to get the pill. Mm-hmm. And eventually it can wear off. So you want to make sure that you focus on him, because he's going to be feeling the best at the beginning of the game. When he goes down at halftime, that thing's going to stiffen up. So I'm going to put all my attention on Tyreek Hill, making sure that no matter what, I'm going to hit him. I'm going to bump him. If he gets the ball, everybody. Don't take him down, hold him up, Everybody come jump on, and let's pile on him and take him to the ground, and let's loosen that thing up. Yes. And then I'm going to take my attention to Travis Kelce and make sure that I bracket him. But I got a lot of belief in Derwin James that he can handle the task, but I'm going to give him a little hamburger helper at the line of scrimmage. I'm going to make sure that I line my defensive end on top of him before, and before I rush, technique. I'm going to hit him, and then what happens is it turns to a natural game because you run a natural U game, because you hit him, you're going to be laid off the line. You run the stunt and get into Mahomes' face.
Very aggressive.
You can write all that down, bro.
I kind of like that. That was a
lot. We're going to get him a video.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.